This is the Moth Radio Hour from PRX. I'm Jay Allison. Our next story was told by Wendy Suzuki at a New York City main stage presented in collaboration with the World Science Festival. The theme of the night was Mercury rising. Here's Wendy Suzuki.
Good evening, everybody. So excited to be here. Long before I ever wanted to be a neuroscientist, I wanted to be a Broadway star. I thought the people that could sing and dance and act all at the same time were the most talented people in the world. But you have to remember that I came from a very serious Japanese-American family. My grandfather came from Japan in 1910, and he started the largest Japanese language school in all of the West Coast. So our family was serious about education. We were very pleasant, very polite, but never overly affectionate. So you can think of us like a Japanese-American version of Downton Abbey, without the accent, the servants, or the real estate. That was us. So despite those early Broadway dreams, I quickly and easily fell into a life of total science geekdom. And after a while, I decided to follow those science geekdom dreams to UC Berkeley, my family's alma mater. And so Mom and Dad packed me up in the car and drove me to UC Berkeley. And again, Downton Abbey. We didn't hug, we just waved goodbye. Bye, Mom and Dad. And soon after I arrived at UC Berkeley, I found the perfect outlet for my science geekiness. And that was a class that I took at UC Berkeley called The Brain and Its Potential, taught by Marion Diamond. I'll never forget that very first day of class. She looked like a 50s Hollywood movie star. She had blonde bouffant hair. She was wearing a beautiful skirt and blouse with a crisp white lab coat covering it. And not only that, she had a hat box with her in front of that classroom. And what she did, she slowly opened that lid, and very carefully, she pulled out a real human brain. I had never seen one before in my life. And she told us that what she was holding in her hands was the most complex structure known to mankind. This is the structure that defined our personalities and allows us to go from laughing to crying in 1 minute or 1 second. Not only that, she told us one of the most amazing things about the brain is that it could change in response to the environment. That is, the environment could change the brain's anatomy, physiology, and function. And that was called brain plasticity. And when she said that, that's the moment I realized that I wanted to be a neuroscientist. Now, during this time in college, I was your typical, I don't need your help, Mom and Dad. I can do everything on my own. And despite the fact that I only lived an hour away, I only went home at Christmas, and we only kind of called each other. I only called them at most once every 3 months. I was busy. I was busy learning how to be a neuroscientist. There's a lot to learn. And one form of brain plasticity that I became fascinated with was memory. How did the brain allow us to take a sensory perception and let us remember that for 20, 30, 40 years, a whole lifetime? I studied the anatomy of the brain areas important for memory. I studied the physiology of the patterns of neural activity. I wanted to understand the neural code underlying memory function. I became an expert in long-term memory and fascinated with all those mechanistic details. But then one day, I was sitting at my breakfast table, and I know it was a Wednesday morning because I was reading the Wednesday food section of the New York Times, which is my very favorite section. And I was excited to see an article about Thomas Keller. And he's the famous chef that owns Per Se and the French Laundry. And I was really looking forward to an article about special butter or unusual speckled eggs that he uses in his dishes. But I was really surprised to find a very touching article about his relationship with his father that happened late in life, and they got very close. And in the end, the father died of a tragic car accident, and I was almost in tears at this point. But then they described a quote that Thomas Keller gave, in which he said, "At the end of the day, all we really have is our memories." And I realized at that moment that I'd spent so much time focusing on the mechanisms and the mechanics and the anatomy of memory that I hadn't really given a lot of thought to how deep and emotional memories were in our lives. Well, sometime later, I got a call from my mother, and she told me that my dad wasn't feeling well. And not only that, that when he was driving around, he couldn't remember how to get to the 7-Eleven where he had been buying his morning coffee for the last 30 years. That was very scary. And so the first thing I did is I called my colleagues at Stanford University and got him the best neurologist that I could find. But during all of this process, I couldn't help but feel so guilty. I was an expert on long-term memory. I knew everything about the anatomy and physiology, but I couldn't do one thing to cure my father's memory problems. Well, during this time, my relationship with my parents had gotten closer. I would call them religiously every Sunday. I would first talk to my mom, and then I talked to my dad. But I knew after this happened that I wanted to shake things up. I wanted to change the culture of my family. And, you know, we knew, my brother and I always knew that my parents loved us, despite the fact that we never said those three words to each other as adults. I love you. Remember, this is Downton Abbey, not Brady Bunch. And so I realized that I wanted to start saying these words, I love you, to my parents. But it was a little bit weird. We'd never said it before, so I couldn't just suddenly start saying it. I realized that on one of our Sunday calls, I would actually have to ask them, would it be okay if we started saying this? Which is very, very awkward. I'm an adult. I have to ask my parents' permission to say I love you, but that's what I had to do. And I was feeling very uncomfortable about this, and I realized I was feeling more than uncomfortable. I was feeling scared because I was worried that they would say, no, I'm not comfortable saying that. I really don't want to say that. And that would make me feel so bad. But I knew the only way to find out what they would say is to ask them. So I gathered up all my courage and I called mom on Sunday night. And my mantra was, keep it light. So talk to mom and dad. How you doing? Here's my week. How was your week? And sometime during the conversation, I said, hey, mom, you know, we never say I love you. What do you think about the idea of starting to say that when we talk to each other? What do you think? And she paused. And my stomach went from down here all the way up to my throat. And she paused. And then she said, I think that's a great idea. And I went, oh, thank God. Okay. So we finished up our conversation, but then the tension started rising again because it's one thing to agree to say I love you, and it's another thing to actually say I love you. So we both knew we were getting to that part of the conversation where we had to say it to each other. And we were kind of circling each other, not sure what to do. And it was my responsibility. I was the one with the idea. I took the bull by the horns, and I said, okay, like, get ready. I love you. And she said, I love you too. And we both went, oh my God, thank God that's over. It was so hard. But we made it through. We made it through. And because that went so successfully, I wasn't worried about my dad at all. I knew he would say yes. I asked my dad, he said yes. We did our awkward I love yous, and the phone call was over. That was so great. But I have to say that after I got off that call, I broke down in tears. It was so emotional to actually have said that. And it was so emotional to know that I had actually changed the culture of my family that night. So the next week I called, and you'll be happy to know that my I love you with my mom got ever so much less awkward that next week. So we're doing really well. We're working it out. And then I start talking to my dad, and I realized that he might not remember that we had made this agreement last week, so I was ready to remind him. But You know something? That week, he said, I love you first. And he said, he has said, I love you first every single week after that. And you have to remember that my dad, sometimes he can't quite remember whether I'm visiting for Thanksgiving or Christmas, but somehow he was able to make this memory work. And guess what? I know why, because I'm a neuroscientist. And I know that emotional resonance is helpful for memories. It really pushes those memories into our long-term memory. So the beautiful emotion of his daughter asking him whether she can say, I love you, to him, it beat dementia and it allowed him to form a new memory. And you can be sure that I will keep that memory for the rest of my life. And now that is why I study memory.
Dr. Wendy Suzuki is professor of neural science and psychology at New York University. Her research focuses on how our brains retain long-term memories and the effects of exercise on our cognitive abilities. The Moth Radio Hour is produced by Atlantic Public Media in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and presented by PRX. If you like stories like these, a great way to support them is by supporting your public radio station. Here's how.